Tom, you should be very pleased that I'm here today because I woke up feeling rotten and I've even given myself a blow dry. I've got flowers in the background because I'm going to miss you so much. There's makeup on and it's not currently smeared down my face, but there's still time for that. How are you feeling ahead of your last show?
It feels weird. It feels weird. I'm going to miss it. But no, thank you very much, Charlotte, for putting loads of effort in. Martin, can I say the same for you?
You can. It's water off a duck's back. But absolutely. What is it that you want to say, as Charlotte put it, your first last episode of The Ag Show?
Oh, just what an amazing podcast this is. I will be listening. So, don't be bad mouthing. That's all I'm going to say.
Can't promise that.
I'm getting a bit upset now. It is actually affecting me. We'll miss you, Tom.
We will. Hi, I'm Charlotte Fawkes-Reese.
And I'm Tom Spencer, and welcome to The Ag Show.
A packed episode this week, including a look at how our current Let's Eat Balance campaign is helping promote the health benefits of consuming beef, lamb and dairy.
What could be more nutritious and healthy in January than British meat and dairy? So in particular, it's focused on talking about the sustainability of British red meat and dairy, but also talking about the health benefits, particularly vitamin B12.
We'll also be talking about succession, hearing from one farmer who's already working through a plan to hand over the reins to her son.
Because we're on a succession tenancy, an AHA tenancy, with one generation to run, we knew as part of that, for Cameron to be able to claim on that tenancy, he would have to be a part of the business for at least 7 years.
And do you know your EBVs from your NBEs? Fear not, as all should become clear when we round off the show by delving into the world of cattle genetics. Say you're a farmer that's going to go and buy a bull, and whether that's on someone else's farm or in a sale ring, you can look up that bull just by using his ear tag in the National Beef Evaluations, and you can have a look at what the data's saying about his genetic merit.
And as always, a reminder, new episodes of The Ag Show drop every Wednesday at midday, available wherever you get your podcasts.
With audio and video versions for every show. Just subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode.
And please do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Comment on any of our social posts or email agshow@ahdb.org.uk. I think this is the bit that's going to really impact me for the final time. I'm able to say, it's time to do the news. Charlotte, what have we got this week?
Yeah, so my news article is something which we're championing at AHDB, and that is urging the pig sector to make one simple, powerful New Year's resolution, and that's muck-free trucks. So contaminated vehicles remain one of the biggest drivers of disease spread, particularly African swine fever and swine dysentery, both of which can devastate farms, disrupt your business and cause long-lasting financial and emotional strain across the supply chain. The message is clear. Every clean truck is a frontline defence. Our campaign encourages farmers to request a muck-free lorry before it arrives. Hauliers are reminded to follow full wash and disinfect procedures every time. And processors are asked to keep wash facilities fully operational to support drivers. These small steps, just a few extra minutes work, could prevent catastrophic losses. So our call to action is really simple. It's your farm, it's your pigs, it's your call. So spread the message, not the disease. So if you want more information or any posters, guides or content to share with your team, we have got a wide variety available at muckfreetruck.com. And with disease pressure showing no sign of easing, and we keep seeing bits cropping up in the news, our campaign is really now showing that at the moment, it is the time to commit to a cleaner journey for stronger, safer pig industries. Tom, what have you been reading?
Yeah, so news in from the Scottish government this week. They've published their proposal for the 26-27 budget, allocating about £160 million to farming and crofting, broadly in line with their 2025-2026 budget. The funding includes $540 million for direct support schemes, just over $170 million for key programmes, and $26 million for the Agricultural Modernisation Fund. Additional allocations include $28 million for peatland restoration, $37 million for new woodland creation, and $1.3 million for skills development. Crofting support totals $4.4 million. The response from industry, they're pleased to see the continuation of a multi-year commitment for a budget. But on the other hand, NFU Scotland says the budget flatlines support and falls short of its call for a £90 million uplift.
Right, let's crack on then. So January is a month when many of us start to question our lifestyle choices. So whether you're exercising enough, with the right partner, have enough cats, in the right job, Tom, not looking at you here for that one. But quite often, a vow to eat healthier is usually among the top resolutions. And our Let's Eat Balance campaign, which is currently in full flow, is a reminder about the benefits of including red meat and dairy in diets. So joining us on the Ag Show to talk more is our Dairy Sector Director, Paul Flanagan. Paul, massive welcome to the show.
Lovely to be here. First time here, but I'm looking forward to it.
So the Let's Eat Balance campaign, it is back for the sixth time. What's the sort of background behind this? Who are we targeting? What are we sort of looking to get from this?
Focuses in particular on consumers, particularly those consumers who are maybe hearing different messages about dairy and red meat. And we want to make sure that they've got, you know, we've got the right evidence in terms of what's happening. So what could be more nutritious and healthy in January than British meat and dairy? So in particular, it's focused on talking about the sustainability of British red meat and dairy, but also talking about the health benefits, particularly vitamin B12.
How important do we sort of see that these bursts of activity are for the campaign and about keeping that in the consumer's mind that, you know, beef, lamb and dairy is really important in their diets?
Well, I mean, let me start from a dairy perspective and I'll maybe broaden this out. But from a dairy point of view, we're in 97% of fridges. So we're probably not going to, you know, there's obviously capacity there in terms of to grow that. So it's really about consumer attitudes that we're focused on. So if you look at how we've shifted consumer attitudes just over the 5 years of the campaign, and I think it's really important that we've kept that consistency into, you know, I know we changed the campaign a little bit here and there, but we keep that consistency across the 5 years. We've been able to shift their attitudes in terms of where they believe that British dairying is sustainable and British, you know, red meat production is sustainable, and consumers' views, particularly around about the health. So we've shifted it 8% up from a health perspective and is rich in vitamin B12 from a dairy point of view, and 7% from a red meat. But we could only do that by being out advertising year in, year out. And I think the other thing to say is TV advertising is central, and it's a thing that when people see it, that'll be the most visible. But we do a whole heap of social media activity, but we also do activity in-store retail. So if you're getting those target consumers on the TV, on the socials, seeing in retail, it really resonates and some of those messages start to hit home. So it's really important we kept that consistency, and it's really important that we can track that. We do, it's YouGov, we do sampling with on a quarterly basis. So we can see these numbers, you know, ticking up every quarter in terms of the impact we're having, in terms of consumer attitudes. We'll have an impact on purchasing, but it's really about consumer attitudes we're trying to shift, Charlotte.
Yeah, and I think it's really important as well for us to flag that when we're talking about, you know, we're seeing these increases and, you know, we're measuring the success, we do have evidence behind this as an independent and an evidence-based organisation. It is something that we do pride ourselves on. So if we're coming out and we are making a statement, we have got the evidence behind it to say that that is true and that is factual. So I think that's a really important thing to flag, that when we are commenting on our successes, they are genuinely there. So with things like the current dip in farmgate milk prices particularly, what sort of impact does activity like this have on potentially helping improve that situation?
I was at a dairy conference in Glasgow Monday and Tuesday, the CMEX conference in Glasgow. So there was about 200 people there, maybe 75% of them were farmers. So we got actually challenged from the stage in terms of what we're doing to do more, more marketing. Now, I know you've talked about it in this podcast a couple of times. We've got a supply side challenge right now. We've got more milk and therefore, as a result, prices have come down quite markedly. The specific things that AHDB can and is doing on that, so we're just in the process of pulling together various bits and pieces of information on hints and tips for farmers and a whole variety of ways that they can look at their specifically cost, they can look at their feeds, and they can look at, you know, forage they use, etc. We'll have all that information on a section of our website quite shortly. We've obviously got the regular stuff that Susie, who I know has been on the podcast, pulls together from a market point of view. We're out speaking to stakeholders, you know, banks, farming unions, processors on this. But what's really important is we look at the demand side. And while that might be more medium term or longer term, what we do from an export perspective and export sales in 2025 and up on 2024, that helps. That gets, you know, product out this marketplace. But what we do to speak to consumers on this, you know, the Let's Eat Palace campaign, or we've got other campaigns, Milk Every Moment, it keeps that demand up there for consumers from a dairy perspective, and just keeps the resonance right there. So it's really important that we do both. And actually, I think I get more questions in terms of what we're doing in marketing at that conference on Monday and Tuesday than, you know, the supply side situation.
What was the mood really like amongst those dairy farmers? What were they sort of coming to you and saying some of their concerns or their challenges or their successes are at the moment?
The positive thing I would say was what has happened from a supply point of view, farmers seem to see it coming. Clearly, the scale of it and the speed of it and the fact that every other milk producing region in the world is experiencing this at the same time is a particular challenge. On the whole, I think the year for farmers, of course, the prices are coming down now and some of them are starting to kick in. On the whole, the year, there'll be a lot of farmers who have, actually this year will be quite good. It's just the challenge is going to be how long this situation, the low price, is going to last for into the next financial year and what's going to be the impact for that. There was a lot of processors there who are clearly concerned as we move into the flush in terms of the capacity in their processing site. Processor has a breakdown. There really isn't the capacity on that. And you will have no doubt picked up stories over the last couple of weeks in terms of some farms having to dump milk. So it's going to be really tight. It's particularly going into the spring flush. Yeah, I guess everybody was talking about when are we going to get through this and what's going to be the point. And that's very difficult to predict. But in the meantime, I think AHDB, there's a number of areas we're leaning on. And this is one where we can actually help to influence things a little bit in terms of consumer demands and that helps, but also support farmers from the supply side.
You mentioned a minute ago as well about another campaign which you run, which is that Milk Every Moment. Do you want to expand a little bit on that for those that might perhaps have not heard about it before?
I guess the background to the campaign is you're at home and your parent or your guardian is going to be, you know, you go to the fridge, it's full or whatever, the stuff in the fridge, and then nobody really has to think about it. When you leave home or where you go to, you know, college or university, having to make decisions on that yourself for the first time. There's a lot of influences on that. Some companies will be anti-dairy from that in terms of encouraging people not to consume dairy. So the campaign is about working with British universities and colleges sports. And they have, I think, around about 100,000 people every year that are playing sports at some level. But there's a community of about 500,000. So it's talking about the benefits of dairy, particularly milk, as a sports recovery drink. There's a whole lot of heap of benefits on that we can learn about this age group and what we can do. But I think the wider things for me is by keeping 18 to 22 year olds in dairy, as they move on to the next stage, which will be coming out, leaving college or university, getting a job, thinking about starting families, you keep them within that. If we were to lose them in that 18 to 22 age group, then the chances of actually getting them back later on are really challenging. So probably the most striking thing that I'm seeing is we were quite nervous going into this campaign because we would think we were going to get quite a bit of pushback from some students about, you know, why is British University and College of Sports working with an organisation that promotes cow's milk and because there's other people doing it. But we've so little negative feedback on that. And we've got a number of student ambassadors who've been really helpful and engaging the students. And I've been to a couple of events. I went to the rugby final in spring, and a couple of months before that, I went to an event where they had students who were swimming and running and all the universities and the colleges across the UK together. And it was just amazing to see how much what we were doing were resonating. The student ambassadors were doing a great job. The mascot was doing a brilliant job. So it's a phenomenal campaign and it's got a huge amount of legs.
Thank you so much, Paul, for your time. I think it's about time we head now to a break.
Hi, I'm Alice Perry with the latest from AHDB for the week commencing the 25th of May. Our chair, Emily Norton, has responded to the latest Farm Assurance Review Progress Report, highlighting work on 14 key recommendations and continued efforts alongside industry partners to support changes within the farm assurance schemes. We've also published a joint paper with the NFU outlining the purpose, scope and value of farm assurance. New opportunities for UK agri-food exports will follow the UK's trade deal with the Gulf Cooperation Council. Tariffs are to be removed on products including dairy, cereals and lamb, helping improve competitiveness in a region where demand for high-quality imports continues to grow. And farmers have the chance to get ahead on environmental planning with our new series of baselining roadshows. The countrywide events happening in June will provide practical guidance on measuring and understanding farm data. That's all for now. Find out more at ahdb.org.uk.
Welcome to AHDB's Forage for Knowledge update for Thursday the 21st of May. This week's average growth at 63 kilos of dry matter per hectare is lower than the same period in previous years. With slurry and fertiliser applications going on, it's worthwhile thinking about what else could be limiting grass growth. Are your soils working at their optimum, be that biologically, structurally or chemically? Liming and correcting suboptimal pH opens the possibilities of increasing availability of NPK and S from biological or chemical sources. Also, to capture the full potential of clover to reduce bagged nitrogen, pH needs to be 6.5. Check and lime if necessary. On grass quality, the averages this week have been 20.3% dry matter, 12.3 ME, 20.9 protein. I'm Emily Udall. For more analysis and commentary from Piers Badnall, go to the AHDB website and search Forage for Knowledge.
Welcome back to the Ag Show. Great to hear from Paul about all the successes and what's to come in the world of Eat Balance and our Milk Every Moment. I always think it's worth mentioning the ex-rugby player, Joe Marler, who it was a few years ago now, who had broken a bone and decided that he would drink an obscene amount of milk. And he attributed that to how quickly he was able to recover and get back to playing rugby. I always think that's my favourite milk marketing story that I always want to mention. But over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be looking at succession. So a subject seemingly pushed higher up the agenda for farmers when inheritance tax reforms were first announced over a year ago. Planning is key, which is why we thought we'd get some advice from someone who's already got things mapped out. Lisa Edwards grows cereals and potatoes near Ormskirk in the northwest of England and has been talking to our colleague Emma Craig about her family-run tenant farm business.
We're a 900-acre arable farm farming cereals and potatoes in southwest Lancashire. There's myself, my husband and my son, all three of us are in the business. And the family's been here since 1949, my husband's family. So it's quite a few generations down the line.
And who's in the wider family then?
We've got an eldest son who lives in New Zealand.
And we're talking a bit about succession. Am I right in thinking you and Simon started that conversation?
Yes, it was kind of brought to a head when our eldest son came back from New Zealand briefly and we realised, well, he got engaged and he wasn't coming home. He was going to stay out there. Then we realised we needed to sit down with the two boys and discuss exactly what they wanted to do and just firm up that Ben didn't want to come back and work on the farm here and that Cameron did want to work on the farm. So that's when we started sort of talking things through with them just to find out who wanted to do what and so we could look at taking the business forward from there.
And how did you start that conversation and bring them to the table?
We just sort of said to them, we need to have a chat. And it was just over tea one night and we started talking about what we thought we needed to do. Because we're on a succession tenancy, an AHA tenancy, with one generation to run. So we knew as part of that, for Cameron to be able to claim on that tenancy, he would have to be a part of the business for at least 7 years. So we discussed with them, us bringing Cameron into the business and giving him a share in the business so that it would secure his claiming succession. But we had to talk that through with Ben to see that Ben was happy with that, because we didn't want any upset further down the line. We wanted him to be fully aware of what we were doing.
And when you started that conversation, did you and Simon have a clear idea of what you wanted to get out of it?
Yeah, we'd already talked about it between the two of us. It was one of those things that progressed. My eldest son went out to New Zealand in 2018. And then through the pandemic, we were like, he couldn't come home. But we were like, he's getting more entrenched there. We could see that he was... you know, setting up networks and developing a life for himself out there. So it was something that we then talked between the two of us of how do we manage this going forward? What's the best way to approach it with both of them? And it's not something that you can do over the phone or anything. So we had to wait for Ben to come back over here to be able to sit down then as a family and talk things through and just keep things as open as possible.
So you've got a generational tenancy, Lisa, how has that kind of worked in with your succession planning?
The agent for our landlords came to talk to us about a rent review. And while we were there, we just sort of started to chat to him about other things. And we started talking about the succession then. Luckily for us, they were open to us actually sorting that succession out now on that AHA. So we involved an agent who he suggested bringing in the three of us as part of that tenancy agreement. So that's the way forward. We were able to bring Cameron in and secure that tenancy then going forward. So we weren't waiting until my husband died to sort it out. We were sorting it out now. And then that gave that bit of security moving forward as well for all three of us.
And how was the landlord in that conversation?
They were really open to it, because I think for landlords as well, if you suddenly somebody dies and then you've only got a limited time period to sort these things out. And I think for them, it probably gave them a bit of an idea of where we were thinking of going.
So you just said then about giving them an idea of where you're going. Where are you going, Lisa? Like, what is your long term plan for you and Simon specifically?
Retirement is a big plan. You know, we do want to retire. Simon's 60 now, so you know, we're looking to retire when we're 65, or at least winding back significantly at that point. So that's always been the plan, is to start really winding down, because I think as well, physically it's hard work, and you know, we're becoming very conscious now that things hurt. You know, you get injuries and they don't heal. So going forward, there's things we want to do as well. And now our son's in New Zealand, we've got a grandson in New Zealand, we want to be going and spending time with them as well. So the idea is that Cameron takes on more of the business and we step back, and then he'll gradually take it over.
Have you got lots of friends from a non-farming background as well, Lisa, that are starting to retire?
And yeah.
How's that had an impact on how you've approached retirement?
Yeah. A lot of our friends have taken early retirement or are coming up to retirement, and you know, they're working for public sector, they're retiring on good pensions and going off and doing lots of things, which makes you realise that there is more to life rather than just farming. So it's I suppose that spurred us on in a way, because we're looking at them and going, well, we want some of that. You know, we want to go and do the things that we've put on hold all these years.
And you mentioned pensions then. How have you and Simon approached planning for that retirement period?
We've always paid into pension right from being in our early 20s. So it was the policy that Simon's father had. The idea has always been you pay enough into pension so the business doesn't have to support you when you get to retirement age.
Do you think being a tenant has maybe changed the way you've thought about that as well?
Yeah. Because you're a tenant, you've got to be full on working as a tenant. There's no let up. You've no assets to fall back on. So you've got to keep going, because you've got that bill of the rent to pay every single year. So it does focus your mind into planning for the future, because you can't just think, oh, we sat on an asset of a farmhouse and so many acres. You've got to be planning, right? Where do we move to when we give up the farmhouse? You know, you've got to look at all those different elements and plan for the worst case scenario, really. because you never know what's around the corner.
Yeah. And how have you kept that fair in these succession conversations when, like you say, yourself and Simon and Cameron are going to be working in the business, but you have Ben over in New Zealand as well? What's been the agreement there?
We've been very open with them about what's in our wills and how we will apportion funds on our deaths. We've said to them, you know, if we die tomorrow, it's this scenario. That will change as time goes on. So all we've said to them is, look, it's not going to be perfect, but we'll review it every 5 years and redo it for that circumstance. And we're always working on the basis of if we die tomorrow, and do it that way. And then hopefully it's as fair as it can be.
And do you include Ben and Cameron's families in those conversations as well?
It's generally just the four of us. I mean, Ben's married now, so yeah, his wife's there as well. But it's so that I think really it's best to be open and honest, and then nobody goes away with, you know, an idea that something different might be happening behind the scenes. You know, I think if we're just up front all the time, hopefully it stops anything occurring which could, you know, because you hear of people having all sorts of grievances, and generally it's because they've not known what the parents have decided until the parents have died, and then it's come as a shock to them.
So on that then, what would kind of your top tips be if somebody was starting this conversation for the first time tomorrow? What would your top tips be about that?
Sit down in a sort of neutral situation and just start opening the conversation of, you know, where do you see yourself in the future? You know, and find out what your children, how they view their future, and how best you can help them achieve what they want to achieve, whilst making sure that you get out of it what you want. And it's got to be a two-way conversation. It can't be just saying, we're going to do this. You've got to involve them and get their opinions on it. I think that's the best way, is just start off having those conversations and then just build on them and just take it in stages. Don't just dump everything on them at once, but do it in little stages.
We'll hear more from Lisa Edwards in conversation with our own Emma Craig on next week's show. In the meantime, there's more advice and guidance on the topic of succession on our website, ahdb.org.uk/succession-planning. Right, time for our next break now.
Hi, I'm Annabelle Twinbarrow, analyst at the AHDB, here with a look at the domestic dairy market for the week commencing 25th of May. GB milk volumes have now slipped into marginal year-on-year decline, and we are now past the seasonal spring peak. March deliveries were 0.1% lower year-on-year, and May-to-date volumes are down by 0.4%, though this is against a record high. In the latest UK wholesale price survey for May, prices remained under pressure, impacted by ample supplies of fat. The average price for mild cheddar was £2,940 a tonne, 1% lower than the last period. Bulk cream prices remain at half the value of a year ago. Minimal movement in the average month pricing gave an average for the month of £1,220 a tonne. The butter price moved down £200 a tonne, 6%, to £3,330 a tonne. However, S&P average prices did see another month of strength, ending at an average of £2,500 a tonne, a month-on-month increase of £140 a tonne. This is the only commodity that is more valuable than a year ago, as demand for protein remains strong. For the latest data and analysis on red meat, dairy and arable markets, head to ahdb.org.uk and click on Markets and Prices.
Welcome back to The Ag Show. If you've got any questions for us or want to get in touch, please do remember to contact agshow@ahdb.org.uk, and we will be back with you every single Wednesday at midday. But now it's time to turn our attentions to genetics, as it was the British Cattle Breeders Conference this week. Harriet Bunning is AHDB's lead animal genetics expert and joins us now to talk about EBVs and NBEs.
Well, Tom, I'm just going to have to call a bit of a timeout here with my producer hat on. You've lost me already. Too many acronyms, so I think we need a bit of this. Yes, it is a time for field agents. Farm industry explained, language decoded, and we have an extra agent in the building. Agent Harriet, I am looking at you as you are our lead genetics expert. What do we mean when Tom was saying about EBV?
EBVs are a simple one, really. It's estimated breeding values, what it stands for. But what it really means is we're taking all the data that we have on an animal, all of its relatives, and measuring the genetic potential of that animal for whatever we're interested in, whether that's days to slaughter, growth rate, or even calving ease.
Brilliant. So that's EBVs. Tom mentioned NBEs. I'm assuming these aren't things that are given out in the honours list.
No, not that one. NBEs are our national beef evaluations. They're produced by AHDB. We publish them 3 times a year. And that's where you go to get EBVs based on national data. So not just for our pedigree animals, but also for our commercial cattle.
Thank you, Agent Harriet. Agshow@ahdb.org.uk if you spot any confusing farming acronyms out there. Right, I shall pipe down. Tom, back to you.
Thank you, Martin. Welcome, Harriet. Thank you for joining us. Yeah, so a lot of farmers think EBVs are associated with pedigree herds. I quite like your sort of views on why you think that that perception exists in the first place.
Well, I guess our pedigree farmers are our farmers that are kind of mostly focused on breeding and genetics. And it's fair to say that they've had a huge impact on our beef cattle that we have in the industry. But there's been a lot of progress recently when it comes to where farmers can go to get data. And now you can access our national beef evaluations. And it doesn't matter. They're not just for pedigree animals. They're not even just for purebred animals. You can look up crossbred cattle in national beef evaluations. And if we have the data, there'll be results for them.
The national beef evaluation. So when if a farmer was to go in there and look at that sort of thing, what might they find?
So our national beef evaluations, I mean, the clues are the name, I suppose. We use national data. So that's calving data, survival data from BCMS. And then also we have effectively kill sheet data. So that's carcass weight, Europe grade, that kind of thing from most of the major beef processors share that with us. And from that, we produce EBVs, and those EBVs are basically, as I said before, measures of genetic merit for those animals. So that's really useful information when it comes to making breeding decisions.
And that's not just on their own farm, but also, I'm guessing, nationally.
Yeah, exactly. Say you're a farmer that's going to go and buy a bull, whether that's on someone else's farm or in a sale ring, you can look up that bull just by using his ear tag in the National Beef Evaluations, and you can have a look at what the data's saying about his genetic merit. But it's not just for bulls, you can look up cows as well. And in fact, we even sometimes produce results for cattle that go to slaughter.
Do farmers need to sign up or record anything themselves to get involved? What sort of data should the farmer be looking for, and how do they sign up?
At the moment, you don't need to sign up at all. It's really, really easy to do. All you do is go to the website, you stick in the ear tag. If it's a pedigree animal, you can try sticking in the pedigree name. We do have some of our breed societies share that data with us, and it will show you the results if we have them. So you don't need to performance record or do anything in particular. The one thing I would say, though, if farmers are looking for more accurate results, is really we rely on sires on passports. We know that when you register calves with BCMS, it's optional to put the sire in that box. And about 50% of our farmers now do that. But we still have 50% of calves where we don't have the sire on the passport. And so that means all of the brilliant data that we have to throw away about half of it, which is just a real shame. The database that sits behind National Beef Evaluations is amazing. We just, as of this month, have tipped over into, we have carcass data for over 16 million animals. So when I say national, I do really mean national. But of that 16 million data points, we throw away 8 million of them because we don't know the size of those animals. So yeah, a real plea to anyone registering calves, please put the sire on the passport.
Now, I'm sure you work with or have experienced sort of farmers on farm and those that are using EBVs and et cetera. What are those improvements to efficiencies or reducing costs within commercial systems that you've seen?
Yeah, so I mean, efficiency is about so many different traits. And that's what's nice about National Beef Evaluations. We do cover a lot of traits that are linked to efficiency. So there are the growth traits, and we know that the genetics for higher growth have huge positive impacts on efficiencies in a lot of systems. So farmers could select on traits like reduced age at slaughter, improved carcass weight. But it's more than just that. And particularly for our suckler farmers, whole herd efficiency isn't just growth rate. Really, we need to make sure that our cows are efficient. And I think most farmers know what they want out of a good cow. And there's some really great data in National Beef Valuations that will help you see that. Particularly, I really like the productive lifespan trait. So that measures the number of calvings a cow has in her lifetime. And we all want cows that have more calvings in their lifetime. So I think really useful when it comes to selecting a bull, because I think if you look at a bull, you can get a good idea of what his calves, how they'll grow just by how big he is for his age and, yeah, how well muscled he is, that kind of thing. But I really struggle to look at a bull and go, ah, he's going to have really fertile daughters. I think if you want to know that about a bull, you need to get information from other places. And farmers are great at asking bull breeders about, okay, what's his dam's calving record like, that kind of thing. But if you want to go a step further, using the EBV basically uses all the data that's available in BCMS. So it can be a really useful tool, particularly on those maternal efficiency traits.
You've talked about National Beef Valuation being the only place in the UK where you can compare animals across breeds. Why is that so important?
So for a pedigree farmers, I think it's fair to say that most people have got their breed and they're going to stick to their breed. And there's lots of different reasons why people have different breeds. But for often commercial farmers are less wedded to a specific breed. So in that case, it's really difficult if you only have, for example, Hereford Cattle Society EBVs compared to Limousin Society EBVs. They're not measuring exactly the same thing. The evaluations are separate. You can't actually compare those EBVs with each other. So the only way that you can compare between breeds is to use the National Beef Valuations, where we have this multi-breed evaluation and lots of data on crossbred animals.
I think after last week's show on all about data, we've carried it on this week, which music to my ears, at least. Thank you so much, Harriet. That's been really informative. And hopefully, if you are a beef farmer and you're looking to get involved, you can visit the National Beef Evaluation. If you search National Beef Evaluation AHDB, I'm sure you'll find it. Thank you very much, Harriet.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for this week. But actually, Tom, I think I'm going to give you the honours of rounding off the show, seeing as this will be for the last ever time.
Yeah, you're totally right, Charlotte. It's a weird feeling, but it is the final hurrah. But I think we've jam-packed my final episode pretty full. Muck-free truck news. Get involved with that campaign if you're a pig farmer. We've had Scottish budget news. We've had the Let's Eat Balance campaign, Milk Every Moment with Paul. We've had lots on succession as well. And thank you, Harriet. You are still here to talk all there is to know about EBVs and NBEs. I got those acronyms right, didn't I, Harriet? Spot on. Thank you all for joining us. If you want to listen to the Ag Show next week, it will be there again, Wednesday, midday. Do please subscribe. And if you want to get in touch, as always, agshow@ahdb.org.uk. And that is the final goodbye from me.
We're going to miss you.
But please make sure you return your microphone and you hand in your field agent badge as well, please. I think Harriet might be using it in the future.